This recording is from the ACA World Convention that was held virtually in May of 2021. The ACA World Service Organization is grateful to all who contributed to making this convention happen, as well as to all who participated. ACA is an anonymous program. Please respect the anonymity of those that participated in the event. To learn more about the ACA Fellowship, please visit us online at adultchildren.org, where you can find information for newcomers, as well as free literature for download. Information about doing service in the ACA Fellowship can be found at acawso.org and acawsoec.org. To purchase literature or to make a Seventh Tradition contribution, please go to shop.adultchildren.org. We hope you enjoy the following recording from the 6th Annual World Convention, Global Recovery, in May 2021.
Welcome all to the next, I guess, final workshop program, or final slot anyway, for this year's AWC on recovery and relationships in recovery. My name is Charlie H. and
I'm Robin T.
We actually are not just cast together for this occasion. We've been married for 17 years and together for 25, as we'll talk about. So thank you all for being here. We have an opening script that we need to go through. So I'm going to do a momentary screen share. And hold on a second.
Do you want me to read the opening? It has to be bigger than that.
I know. We're going to. Here we go. So, sorry, a few technical issues. So anyway, I will read the welcoming statement. Then we're going to have a few people help us as we read. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to our AWC community all around the globe for this, our 6th annual ACA World Convention and our second fully virtual online convention. While the pandemic continues to be a challenging time for many of us, we see how events like this can bring us together. And for that, we are grateful for our ACA recovery. This is the largest adult child meeting in the world, connecting our ACA members, our family of the heart all around the planet to heal together as one unified fellowship. This convention is being hosted by the ACA World Service Organization, and our theme this year is Global Recovery. This year, we have 27 sessions running over 30 hours around the clock and around the world. As I mentioned, my name is Charlie. I'm an adult child, and the session here is Relationships in Recovery. I asked Frederick to read the statement on anonymity.
Thank you. I am Frederick and I'm an oral child. Anonymity, please be sure to rename yourself in the participant screen to show only your first name, last in, name, initial, and country. Please remember our spiritual principle of anonymity as this meeting is being broadcast around the world and also will be recorded on audio and distributed later. We therefore ask that you do not record any audio, video, or pictures of the AWC. We also ask that you do not share the link to this conference. Each member should request their own access to the AWC. This is so they can acknowledge our commitment to trying to protect the personal anonymity of AWC attendees. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Frederick. And then our next reading is on meeting safety. I asked Julianne to read that.
Thank you, Charlie. Meeting safety. During the meeting, only the active speakers will be unmuted. Video, microphone, and chat will generally be disabled for all viewers. This is to ensure a safe listening experience for all. Some meetings may ask for sharing or for volunteers to do a reading. To request to speak, please use the raised hand feature in the participant's screen at that time. You will be unmuted when it is your time to speak. The chat feature may be opened for viewers to post questions or otherwise interact in the meeting via this function. Please remember that you Please remember what you hear at this meeting should remain at the meeting. We do not talk about another person's story or experiences to other people. Please respect the anonymity of all those who share with us today. And we do not crosstalk during the sharing time. Crosstalk means interrupting, referring to, or commenting on what another person has said during the meeting. We also don't distract from the person sharing. Distracting means doing anything other than paying full attention to the person speaking in an online meeting. This also includes background noise, which can happen if you are not muted or your video is switched on and there is activity going on around you. Pass.
Thank you so much, Julianne. The opening will be read by Robin.
We meet to share the experience we had as children growing up in an alcoholic or dysfunctional home. That experience infected us and it affects us today. By practicing the 12 steps, focusing on the solution, and accepting a higher power of our understanding, we find freedom from the effects of alcoholism and other family dysfunction. We identify with the problem and learn to live in the solution one day at a time. Please join me in opening our meeting with the ACA Serenity Prayer in whatever language or way calls to your heart. Taking a deep breath.
I'm going to turn this over to Tom B., who I asked us to briefly lead us in the Serenity Prayer.
Hey, we'll take just a second to remember all those around the world who are in ACA or out of ACA and would do well by working with the program. So we'll begin with higher power, grant us the serenity to accept the people we cannot change. The courage to change the one we can, and the courage, no, and the wisdom, I'm sorry, to know the difference, or that one is me.
Wonderful. Right. Thank you so much, Tom. All right. And then lastly, in our pre-readings, Aaron D. has agreed to read the 12 steps.
Aaron D. from Pennsylvania, 12 steps of ACA. 1, we admitted we were powerless over the effects of alcoholism or other family dysfunction, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand God. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrong. 6, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked God to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, we continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand God, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others who still suffer and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you very much to all of our readers. So with that, we will begin our program. If I could ask people to mute who are not speaking. So with that, Robin, if you would start us off.
Yeah, hi everybody. I am Robin. I am a recovering adult child, and this is my husband, Charlie. Also a recovering adult child. And a lot of times in meetings, we kind of do a qualifier, and you'll be hearing later about our qualifying as ACAs. But what I wanted to say is that Charlie and I have known each other for almost 27 years. We have been a couple for 25 and a half years. We just celebrated our 17th wedding anniversary. And I've been in ACA recovery for almost 38 years, well over half my life. And although Charlie wasn't my first marriage, I do expect that we will still be holding hands and laughing when one or both of us decide we need to transition off the planet. And through the years, when people have met us in recovery particularly, they'll say, you know, how do you do that? This is so hard. All the trauma we had in our childhood. And I will say to anybody, you know, what Charlie and I learned is our recovery had to come first. Our individual recovery had to come first. But then we also had to learn to really appreciate the other person's recovery, the other person's journey, and to value and respect where they had to go to. And so far it's working.
So yes, and part of what got this started, we actually were sort of agreeing to fill in because of a schedule change a couple of weeks ago, but similarly 4 years ago at the San Diego convention, the primary speaker at a Sunday banquet luncheon took terribly ill the day before, and we were asked, could we do something? We did a talk on essentially relationships and recovery. And we thought off and on about, would we ever want to go into greater depth, you know? And so when a similar situation arose, we thought this was something that is good for us to share. And truly, one thing I always want to emphasize in a situation like this, it's not like I was struck successful in relationships at all. Actually, 9 years into ACA recovery at 40, I was really doing so badly. I was seriously preparing myself for the idea that I might never really find anything other than a life of solitude and do my best with that. So from my perspective, not just our relationship, but the whole range of relationships that have been made possible to me through ACA, it's something for which I sincerely feel gratitude. I really know what we're about to share with you is really about the gifts of ACA in action and other 12-step recovery that we do. So with that, I'm going to go back into screen share for a second and proudly display the PowerPoint that I've helped create. And I say proudly because I got a D in seventh grade art, so the miracles of what we can do with computers has probably gotten me up to where I could get a B minus in art today. So we each wanted to talk a little bit about our beginnings and how it related, but a huge theme we think in ACA is that getting to a healthy relationship really needs to deal with overcoming the fact of early childhood trauma. That in fact, the damages and injuries that occur to us early almost set us up exactly in the wrong path for doing a healthy relationship. What kinds of relationships we're talking about? Actually, all kinds of relationships. I don't think it's realistic to just instantly be able to work with your family of origin. It was not realistic in my case to be able to attempt a coupleship. So where we really began, both of us, was developing safer relationships in ACA. Relationship with ourselves and our inner child was quite critical. And then eventually, by the time we did things like family or coupleship, we had a whole different preparation. And again, I want to emphasize that ACA can be a recovery lab. It's a place where you can learn safety and wholeness. And none of what we're talking about today actually depends on being in a coupleship. It's just about how do we find a better way of relating. Lastly, there is an actual definition about a healthy relationship in the Big Red Book that is quite simple, quite elegant. It just simply says a healthy relationship involves talking about feelings, mutual respect, and a commitment to trust, a very hard concept for adult children, and honesty. It's essentially a relationship in which you can feel safe, trusted, open, and free to be our authentic selves. So I will keep this short. I was the youngest of three children. I really feel I was abandoned on arrival. All the family stories tell that essentially other caregivers took care of me right away. Once when I was 8 months, my entire family left for a 2-week vacation. The laughing story later said that I didn't recognize any family members when they came back. And I felt my blood temperature drop about 20 degrees when I heard that story. It's my inner child really felt great anger. By the time I was 8, my family moved to California, and I went through a time, our whole family went through a time that was severely traumatizing, regular violence, extreme alcoholism, especially on the part of my mother. And I just shut. It was like a fuse snapped in me. I had no sense of self. I had an absolute terror of abandonment from very early on, which still triggers every now and then today. And then it was more than to say I felt that we don't talk, we don't trust, we don't feel. Literally, I lost those capacities even before I developed them. So I think it's actually more accurate as a childhood effect to say I couldn't talk, I couldn't trust, and I couldn't feel. So I really, in terms of being able to connect with other people, suffered injuries that were quite devastating. We want to pause. We forgot to tell you, if you have a notebook and a pen handy, that would be great. If you don't have a pen handy, just maybe reflect on this. But we wanted people to take 1 minute. We're all on timers, Robin and me. You might have heard a timer go off a second ago. But if you can basically take 1 minute to write down maybe one or two relationships that were very difficult for you, or a moment that wounded you that you think might still impact relationships today. You don't need to write an essay, literally just a couple of words to gather the memory for yourself. And then after you've written it down or thought about it, feel free to share on chat, but we'll give 1 minute of quiet reflection. Okay, we're going to wrap up in a few seconds and pick up with Robin.
No, am I? Okay. For me, I did have, by the way, that is not me, the baby. That is me over to the extreme right wearing the plaid skirt, because I had way more trauma happening in my teen years. My early years weren't perfect. We moved around a lot. My parents were heavy drinkers. My mother, by the time I was in second grade, had already gone into her first rehab, a pattern that she continued. And it was rough. But one of the saving graces was when I was in second grade, they moved to a neighborhood where there were a lot of kids and a lot of different families. And so I ended up having some parenting from everybody. And then when I was in junior high, my mother actually had managed to put together like a whole year of sobriety. She was in AA. Before that, she would go out every 6 months. By that time, she had already been to like, in the 5-year period, had been to like 10 rehabs already. But I thought things were getting better. My dad had stopped drinking because he had diabetes, and things were actually in a way looking hopeful. And then I was awakened in one morning, February 7th, and told my dad was dead because he had been coming home from a business trip and a woman who had been cut off at two bars hit him broadside at an intersection. And that pretty much my life was hit broadside at that moment too. because now I was a 13-year-old not knowing what to do. My sister was headed off for college. She already was a very active drinker. And my mother worked for the school system. So everything was a family secret. I started pushing away friends so that nobody would know that what was going on. We moved out of our neighborhood that I loved to an apartment. My mother gave away my cat without even talking to me about it. And it was a mess. And so I could go on and on. I mean, because this, like I said, she did get sober eventually, but she was in 23 rehabs in a 10-year period. At the end, she was in Detroit City Hospital in the psych ward. I thought she was going to die. I thought I was going to die. And during that period, those are the teen years when supposedly we're socializing. And I was basically an unsupervised kid, just doing the best I could, totally in survival mode. And so what I realized as I was going in, because I'm going to take this now like into my earliest relationships as well. And yeah, you can go ahead and put that slide up. Oop, got it. what I realized is that, because my mother sometimes would even disappear for, days at a time, and I wouldn't know where she was. So what I started to develop, even in my first significant relationship, is, if you need me, you won't leave me. I may leave you, but if you're dependent on me, then you won't leave me. And it gives me some control. And if you're dependent enough on me, I have enough control to make the relationship tolerable for me. And if I couldn't do that, I'd leave and I'd find somebody else. And if I didn't really give my heart away, then I'd be safe. My favorite song was I Am a Rock. Some of you may remember the Simon and Garfunkel song. I didn't know what love was anymore. It had gotten mutated into hostage taking. And my first significant relationship was just, it was like just starving. We constantly were breaking up, getting back together, breaking up. I would have in between relationships. It was a mess. And as I said in my earlier talk, we were supposed to actually get married at one point. And I was, by that time I had moved east and my mother had gotten sober. And I was actually seeing her in a sober relationship. This was after 5 years of a mess, but I still had carried all these patterns with me. So what ended up happening when I moved east and I was trying to get along with this guy that I thought I was going to marry, I realized, oh my God, I can't. I got along a lot better when it was a long distance relationship. And so I realized that, no, I couldn't marry him, didn't know how to really say that. I met somebody at work and he started getting interested in me. And literally I did some talking back and forth with my so-called fiance. And then made a decision, I was moving on and called my mom and said, the wedding's on, but I've changed grooms. This is what I carried in. And what was ironic about it is my first husband, 12 and a half years older, he had 4 kids. I mean, but again, he needed me. I knew how to help take care of his kids. And so where I got to, we're supposed to kind of take this up to our bottom. So I was an artist, I was a photographer, and I was in my first judge and jury show, and my first marriage made it safe enough for me to be starting to feel my feelings. It wasn't the greatest marriage in the world, but it gave me some opportunity. And so I went to I was in my first judge and jury show. And I got a blue ribbon and I looked at the blue ribbon and I felt nothing. And by that time, my sister was already in AA and she basically had gone to some ACA meetings and she said, maybe you need help too. And I knew I hadn't outrun the family disease. I needed help desperately. So that takes me up to there.
And so I had actually, this part of my life was actually quite similar to Robin's. I was essentially completely shut down emotionally by the time I left elementary school. And so don't feel was my only state. Now, when I made it into teenage years and college years, I really had what I would call a significant attachment disorder. I would swing between hunger. I want somebody. We talk also number three, an unresolved desire for a loving mother. And so I would race in and then feel very unsafe. Number six is extreme untriggerable fear. The minute I was in, I was afraid of being controlled and annihilated, and I would race out because I was afraid I had found my mother of origin. And so where I think Robin and I have something very in common, I don't know to the degree this is in common, but there is so much turmoil in the kind of relationships I found when I found them, that even though my ability to do any relationships were affected before my teen years, I found in my teenage years and young adulthood, they were especially explosive in an intimate relationship. There was so much at stake. All my old historical family wounds would just shoot to the surface, and I was very volatile and unsafe to be with. What I think we both have in common is if you lose faith that you'll find happiness with other people, you start coming up with other kind of settling type choices. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say I avoided relationships altogether. I did tend to get into codependent relationships where I felt like I knew the rules, but somehow I just repeated the past. More critically, I came up with what we call, talking this through, emotionally avoidant relationships. You're in a relationship, but you're not really opening yourself. And that, sadly, was unfortunately what my first marriage was like. I was married for 13 years, but it was almost a bit like my first wife had the misfortune of marrying an emotional zombie. And so by the time I entered, we reached ACA or the need for ACA, my adulthood was already pretty similar to my childhood. I was lapsing into disconnection and some addictions. So with that,
cheerful commentary.
I was going to say, on this happy note, the fact that we're here tells you this is not necessarily the last chapter. We'd like everyone to take another minute, if you could. And again, same thing. Now, instead of what happened to you as childhood, think about something that happened to you either in a teen or an adult relationship. Could be work, could be friendship, doesn't have to be romance. Something which really went off the rails and you think it might have had something to do with your childhood. Again, just a few notes just to jot them down. And also, if you resonate with this idea of you found ways to try to limit or avoid deep relationship pain, maybe write a note or two about that. 60 seconds and we'll resume. About 10 more seconds. Now, if you have any experiences you'd like to share in the chat, please feel free to do so. And I don't know if we can actually open up the chat to everybody. I think that might actually help for this program, not just among the panelists. But we did actually at this time want to open it up, and time is tight, so I apologize. It'll be a minute each for maybe two, maximum of three people. But we would like to open the floor for a few minutes. If anybody...
Just reactions.
Just kind of reactions. Mm-hmm. If this is resonating with all of you, if you have an experience you'd like to share, and five people have raised their hand, so we're going to take that as a yes. The first... If I see this right, the first is Cynthia P. And I'll ask you to unmute. Cynthia, can you speak? One more try.
Cynthia, you should be able to unmute yourself.
We can circle back if Cynthia is not able to join us. Next up is Selena W. And if the tech folks can take charge of that. Selena, can you speak?
There we go. Selena.
Oh, hi. Thank you. You had actually lowered my hand, but yeah, these were huge impacts on me. I was a teenage runaway, and that trauma ended up following me all through my adult life as I spent like my teenage years in true survival and going from one rescuing, trying to be rescued throughout my teenage years, and taking, you know, abuse and abusing people, and got to the place where no relationship is much easier. Yeah, so avoiding relationships has become easier.
Thank you, Selena, for sharing. John W., if I could call on you next, and we'll see if we can allow you to talk.
Excuse me. Hi, John W. I'm sorry, just real quick, clarify what's the topic or question?
Your hand was up. If you don't want to talk, you can take it down. We're talking about just whether this notion of what Rob and I have talked about in our early years resonates with you, if that sort of matches your experience in any way.
Got it. I was writing it down. yeah, just real quick, because it just pops out of nowhere, even though I'm a little bit in the middle age group. For me, it was confusion, because one example is confusion. I grew up confused, not knowing what was the truth, what was going on, because there was so much denial. And I got just popped up. Somebody said something, so it triggered me to say, for example, my mother, sober mother, enabling mother, this happened to me when I was 11 years old, actually fed me my pet rabbit, whom I loved, nurtured, and took care of. I had no words at that time, and even now I'm still in shock. Like, why did my mother feed me my pet rabbit? And today, that confusion still exists. Like, I think in colors, but sometimes I'm black and white in thinking. I take what people say literally, and that causes me to get confused and frustrated, because when somebody I grew up 5 different languages. I have not mastered any of them. So when you say gas station, I know like 150 different gas stations from New York, Chicago, California. So you got to be more clear and specific. And so that causes me confusion. So I'm still working with my relationships when I articulate and think I'm clear what I say. And then I'm called a liar when I don't lie. But okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to call one more person, Munti M, if I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
Hello. Yes. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Munti Adelchild. Thank you so much for this topic. I resonate a lot with what you said about emotional avoidance due to trauma. I grew up in a very dysfunctional family, where there was a lot of anger and rage. And I can see that my parents were very unhappy. And then later on, a lot of my siblings, especially my sisters, started to want to correct that by developing relationships and like getting engaged very quickly, getting married, having children. And all of them blew up in our faces. And I felt like I was involved in that, even though I never got married or engaged. But the trauma of that and the trauma of seeing my parents and their unhappiness in their relationship made it very, very difficult for me to be intimate with anyone. Mm-hmm. And throughout my life, I remember for a very long time, I've avoided relationships until I could leave the country. I was living in where my parents are from. And then I said, okay, I'll date when I go to the US and I'll be free and I'll be safe. And I was not, because the only way I could connect with anybody would be either to have a long distance relationship. Mm-hmm. And as soon as there anything comes closer, I would bolt, I would run away. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very hard for me. It literally causes me panic to know that somebody wants to be with me. And I know deep down inside, I want to be a mom. I want to be a wife. I want to have a relationship. I just don't know how, because relationships cause me panic. So thank you for this topic. It's really helpful for me.
Thank you.
Munti, thank you. I think you put that really perfectly. You know, when you talked about panic, I know I can identify. Yeah. So
I almost bolted this morning. just being scared of this.
So I want to thank a bunch of hands went up. We'll give other chances to share. But I want to thank you. So really this gets to the heart of where we go with this. And that's when we get to ACA, it's an opportunity for a fresh start. It's an opportunity to unlearn a lot of what we learned growing up. Again, we mentioned earlier this notion of what's a healthy relationship in ACA. And one of the challenges for the newcomers is oftentimes if you go into a room or now on a Zoom call where people do speak honestly, they do share their feelings, that itself can be confusing and frightening. You know, that the old standbys of don't talk and don't trust and trying to hang on to don't feel are still very much things we need to work through, even in an ACA meeting and setting where it's supposed to be safe. So a whole lot of what we want to talk about next, and Robin will sort of take the first crack at this, is what are lessons we can start learning in ACA and therapy for those who do that, which little by little allow us to start releasing these old patterns that really just completely shackle us when we try to get into relationships.
Mm-hmm. So the very first one, our childhood really did affect us. I mean, as I said, I went into people pleasing. My sister and my mother had a difficult relationship, so I would always want to try to work between them. I was out of it. I mean, in terms of what did I want? I really, so that leads to focus on ourselves. I was so other oriented. I got so that if somebody raised an eyebrow, I was like, what does that mean? How do I react to that? And so it put me into this situation of really my very first, the serious relationship when I left. Oh my God, it was always in survival mode. You know, is he going to leave? Am I going to leave? What's going to happen? And also I never thought it was safe to tell what was really going on with me. I begged my first husband to get into therapy when I went into therapy. I begged him when I got into ACA meetings to try that because he was certainly eligible. But no, he was a tough New Yorker and had been a Marine, and this was, we're not going to do that. And I was losing my cuteness because I was doing it. And definitely this going in, I didn't really learn some of this until my later relationships in ACA, where we learned to talk authentically to each other. We'd go to the meetings after the meeting and talk about what was going on. I got into women's groups. It was huge to suddenly learn to trust women instead of always trying to please everybody. Loving my inner child was a big one because actually I had some really happy times as a kid. And so I remember going to one of my early meetings in addition to ACA was also, you know, there are love relationships. I wasn't a sex addict, but love relationships. I had always felt like if I don't have a relationship, I won't survive. And I remember coming out of one of those meetings, it was a women's meeting, and I could almost hear my inner kid say, you see, all those relationships weren't for me. And I was like, whoa, who's talking here? And I really started paying attention to her thoughts and feelings. Art and music are huge to me and huge to her. And that's where I started reconnecting with music and art and just talking to her and other people in meetings. Huge.
So I'll pick up earlier, and we're going to come back to it later on in a little greater detail. We did a list of like 12 deficits that are pretty mm-hmm. typical of people who grow up in an emotionally traumatizing childhood. Robin, I agree. We actually, all 12 fit us. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there are probably another dozen we could have come up with. Same with these lessons. I'm going to go to the next page, not to repeat her, but I want to say, couple that were a big deal for me were learning to put the focus on myself. I was desperate for other people's approval and I needed to be unhooked from that. And also it was important for me just to know there was hope and that I wasn't alone, that there was a community and a higher power, healing power, some might call it, and a loving parent I could connect with. Those started to change my inner world. Now, other things that really affected me in the positive way, I had no idea I had an inner child. And then when I finally discovered I had an inner child, I discovered I had a very wounded, angry inner child. And it took a lot of work reparenting to get him to trust me. You know, because I didn't know he was there, I never paid attention to him. Boundaries and gender role healing kind of go together. One of the best things that ever happened to me was I got into an all-male therapy group and then found an all-male ACA meeting. And I never quite appreciated the degree to which I really felt ashamed and kind of not like a real man. You know, I was the youngest of three brothers. I tended to be more the intellectual. I tended to be the guy who got pushed around or silenced. And so, it gave me a real sense of power I hadn't known when I was told you could say, I need you to stop doing that. Mm-hmm. And particularly doing that with men, you know, and I will also say, it was less emotionally charged for me to learn the art of setting boundaries or negotiating, talking with another man in an ACA meeting than it was with a woman on a first date. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like by learning small where there's less at stake, actually I realized sooner or later with women, I could also set boundaries. And that was like the seas were parting for me. So healing my relationship with other men was a big deal. And then lastly, compassion. I make as many mistakes or more mistakes as I did when I first came into ACA. But because I know there's an inner child who's ready to just fall to pieces over that, my first reaction is not that bad. It's not a big deal. I've been given compassion from friends in recovery, and that's been hugely healing. Robin, you said it looks like you want to say something.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about 10th step and compassion. Sometimes when I'm working with people or fellow travelers or something, and they're, you know, struggling with this reparenting thing, I'll say, well, actually, just like we learn in recovery, we can make amends to ourselves.
Yeah.
So if we miss that play date with our inner kid, we can reschedule mm-hmm. a new one.
Mm-hmm.
Because we get busy, we're doing all this adulting stuff, and sometimes we can actually abandon ourselves, but we can make an amend and we can have compassion for all parts of ourselves.
And I also want to say about the 10th step, my personal favorite step in many ways. Shame was a huge issue for me alone. Shame was a crippling issue the minute I got involved with other mm-hmm. people, because I felt like basically the minute I made a mistake, I would be rejected. Any attempt at that relationship would blow up like a plane blowing up in the sky. The 10th step gave me something I could do. I could say, you know what? I am wrong. I genuinely feel bad. I will do differently. And so the sum total of all of this, and it wasn't conscious. It wasn't like I laid out the 5-year plan for learning to do relationships better, but going to ACA meetings, I learned to relate in a whole new way with other people. They basically encouraged me to have a new relationship with myself and very much with my inner child. It started friendship and work. You know what? I'm going to be late with assignment. That would have almost made me want to slash my wrist, but now you kind of did it. And then you learn other people weren't as harsh on you as you thought they were. Oh, okay. Thanks for telling me. If you get it to me in another 2 days, I'll be fine. You know, it started opening up room for space. Now, the boundaries thing came in huge value with my family. My family was not a big fan of ACA. I think their typical comment was, when are you going to stop going to these meetings? And basically, I said, when I don't need them anymore. And I really developed better, stronger relationships with my two bigger, older brothers. And actually, to my amazement, a better relationship with my mother by the time I was done that was very much rooted in honesty. I think I was probably one of the few people she would accept no from.
And I wanted to add with that about recovery and relationships. One of the important things, I had not gotten good modeling about relationships at all, but when I saw my mother finally get sober She was working a 12-step program. She was now married to someone who took the program very seriously. I was seeing her not just stop drinking. I was seeing what it was like to do a relationship in recovery. I saw a great deal of respect between the two of them. I saw communication between the two of them. They each had communities, even if they were driving each other crazy for a while. They had sponsors. They had friends. They had a whole community. My mother had been totally isolated in her relationship with my dad. And this was different. And that looked good to me.
And I will just say very similarly, for me, I always wanted to dive straight into coupleship. And I always thought if I just found that one right person, it was going to be great. It was going to magically fix everything about my life. ACA just gradually got me more real. And I realized what I really wanted was somebody I could talk to and communicate with. And I didn't care if that was a couple. I just wanted that. And I wanted respect and I wanted safety. And I really wanted somebody who could accept that child in me. And so without even knowing it, I think Rob and I both think we were gradually becoming more ready for a complex relationship like coupleship.
Yeah, I had already been doing ACA recovery for 10 years before I even met Charlie.
Yeah.
And you had close to that,
yeah,
right?
Very
at that
similar.
Point,
yeah.
Before we even met.
Yeah.
So we had been doing a lot of work in that time.
So, and that's probably the single greatest point of what we want to say is relationships begin with healing from within, undoing all that damage we grew up with. So another minute, another audience exercise. For those of you who have been in therapy, you can include therapy. For those of you who have been just in ACA, we'd like you to name two helpful things you've learned and just gotten better at that positively affect your ability to do healthy relationships. And also name a couple of things you still feel like you would most like to learn. We'll give you a minute and same thing, no novels, just a few words on a written page.
We've decided we probably could do about a 3-day workshop on this. We're trying to keep it really concise, just the bullet points.
Yeah, really. Ten more seconds. Okay. So we're moving into the next segment, which we call Rethinking Relationships. And it's the idea is how do we start even reframing what it is we're thinking about and trying to do when somebody comes into our orbit. And it really is built around living with the lessons we've learned in ACA, putting recovery, self-love, a huge gift of ACA, higher power, healing power at the center of our being. And everything else gets rearranged around that, which as we're gonna point out is different from what many of us grew up with. This first sort of archery target, if you will, is built on dependent relationship cycles, starting with, if you think of this as representing the relationships of an addict or a person who's maybe mentally ill or severely depressed.
Everything's orbiting around the addiction.
Yeah,
it becomes the higher power in the family or in the individual.
And then what kind of people do you try to bring into your life to support that? Well, the people nearest and dearest, and that's what's the center represents what's most important to you, what's less important to you. Well, you start either finding enablers or training and creating enablers, people who can essentially either prop up your addiction or they're going to live all around your depression, for instance. I think we all know what growing up in that family is, and that's the place where many of us land is in that enabler role. Authority figures, oftentimes they're authority figures because they hold the strings on something. A classic example is alcoholics often are said the last thing to go is their employment because they need the money to drink, you know? And so you'll respect that kind of authority figure. And then who do we most keep out on the fringes?
The healthy, honest people. I pushed all those wonderful friends from my elementary school days. I pushed them out of my life and I became friends with somebody else who had alcoholic parents because my mother worked for the school system. I was afraid the family secrets would be found out. And all these wonderful people who would have, I've since reconnected to some. They're like, oh, we wish we knew what was going on. We could have helped. Some of them also were going, but we all were in that no talk rule. So we wanted to keep people away who actually probably could help us. We were scared. We were living in this craziness.
So the next relationship circles is probably the one we all know because we were born into it, the codependent relationship circle. Somebody else, as you say, we don't form relationships, we take hostages. Where we're forming a relationship initially with the parents, later on potentially the romance partner, a real close friend. But basically, who now gets the center of the stage? Is it us? Actually, no. Is it our inner child? Absolutely not. It actually is quite similar. Mm-hmm. We hook up with somebody. We want their love. If they'll stop drinking, that'll be great and they'll have my love. But actually, the bad news is, they're in love with something else. They're in love with the addiction or their behavior, not you.
You can't have a relationship. If your primary relationship is with a substance or a behavior, that is the primary relationship. It's impossible to have a relationship with somebody who is actively using or actively in an obsessive behavior. Mm-hmm. Impossible.
And before ACA, most of us put something else in the center other than ourselves, of the romance partner who's going to fix us, the person we admire that's going to give us worth because they make us their friend.
You complete me, yeah. Right?
You know, mom and dad, you know, we just continue, you know, getting into those toxic family reunions, but somehow we get into relationships where we get lost and we find people, frankly, who resemble the second circle of close people. Tend to be people who resemble our family, who tend to trigger us or control us. And again, who's out in the cheap seats? Healthy, intimate people who might actually be able to see what we're really feeling.
And we're not showing who we are. We're still people pleasing. So how can we find people who can know and understand us? Because we're frankly putting on an act. We're in our pseudo role. Mm-hmm. We don't even know who we are. Yeah. How do we let somebody else know who we truly are?
Yeah, and ACA, of course, talks about the false self. It's a way we survive our childhood. But in adulthood, when we live from the false self, we are nowhere in our own center. This is what we get, codependent relationships. And we thought maybe someday we'll make money by doing a contest where who can come up with the best answer of what is a sign of you know you're codependent when. But here's a few we came up with. For me, I always got involved with people who I thought would reject me, and I always thought I would die when they did reject me. It was a horribly insecure place. Robin?
Well, somebody mentioned wanting to be rescued. And the funny thing, the ironic thing, if you can attract somebody you think's going to rescue you, that role gets turned. Pretty soon, you're the one who turns into the rescuer. And this does not work, folks. Yeah.
And so basically, we pick somebody else to be the center of our universe. And lo and behold, you know, you kind of get used up. You feel lost in the shuffle. Just basically, I've always found anytime I got in a situation where I was obsessed, your approval is going to make me happy. The results always were devastating. I wound up with no sense of safety, no happiness, and actually just shattered at the end because I got no approval and
feeling lonelier than if you were actually alone. Now you are with somebody of supposedly a significant relationship and you're feeling lonelier than you ever were. You're feeling totally abandoned. It just replays the worst of the childhood.
And actually, there's something else Robin and I were talking about. This is a period where typically, if we even knew we had an inner child, and this happens in recovery relationships, we tend to abandon our inner child.
Right under the bus.
Yeah,
we're in love. Yeah. Under the bus.
We're so busy trying to placate somebody that the inner child is gone. So fortunately, there is hope. And this actually, again, was not something we ever did by design. It was just kind of a natural result of our evolution, because we each happened to be, you know, Robin is saying she was doing her program for 9 years before we got together. I was doing it about the same amount of time. I really was pretty damn depressed. My attempts at relationship were not ennobling. They were not looking good. But I kept taking time out, and those breaks helped. And eventually over those 9 years, I had a great relationship with my inner child. He mm-hmm. did come to trust me. Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, and this is sometimes surprising to people, that, well, isn't that lonely? Wait a minute. Inner child, loving parents, spirit source, higher power, sobriety. Wait, there's no other person in that inner circle. Yeah, that's true. And the reason is because part of the deal when we're involved with somebody else, they have their own higher power. It's not us. I've got my own higher power. It's not Charlie. And so we are growing and changing. Now, that what I do know, though, is I'm listening to my own conscience. I'm doing my own work. I'm doing my own growth. And so, yeah, there are times when even the people we're closest to don't understand what we're doing to just become who we are. And we feel less lonely if we have this circle and people who understand the process.
Mm-hmm. And actually, something Rob and I talk about a lot, and this I think surprises people too. You'll notice again that intimate partner, this would be me and Robin's chart and Robin and my chart. I think people are surprised that we aren't in that nice yellow closest to the center circle. Well, the reason is, you know, I have an addiction. Mm-hmm. If I started drinking, not only am I not in that yellow circle, I'm bouncing myself out to, we need to reassess the situation. The truth is, ultimately, because there's such a fear of abandonment, to protect our inner child, we need to have only those we count on not to abandon that child. And those are resources ultimately within us. Everybody else outside, we bring in the ones we trust. I've learned to get some amazing friends in recovery, but I always know they have their own lives and they might go in their own direction. And so I'm never going to, I've got a love at the center. We wanted to talk a little bit about how this kind of mentality, and the people who keep at the distance are the ones that we know are toxic for us, or we just need to reassess. We wanted to talk a little bit about how this starts changing your world. If you actually have a loving relationship with your inner child at the center, abandonment stops becoming the same issue. Because I know, and Robin and I have been together 25 years, and I think we are now
as a couple,
are quite optimistic we'll stay together. But ultimately, even there, we're no longer young. One of us will pass away. And so I think we know, actually, there still will be love in my heart or your heart if one of us is gone, and that our inner child is cared for. And it makes us less afraid of abandonment.
Right. And with the way my dad died, I was, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, about when, what we had to learn to do to take care of ourselves when we needed to fight and things like mm-hmm. that. But the way to be awakened and told your dad is dead, not only dead, but of because somebody hit him who was drinking, and then have your mom continue to drink for 5 years, and she would drive drunk every time she went out the door. Sometimes I had physical fights with her over the car keys. I had a tremendous fear that I would be left alone and be as vulnerable as I was in those days. This work in recovery made me less vulnerable. I learned that I had a whole huge family, all of you, that if something, and I have met people who have had terrible things happen, I've gone through tough things, and I had a whole family, that I learned that higher power, I can't demand who the person is who's going to give me love and nurturing, but that higher power will through all of you, through you. Everybody I know has gone through something terrible. And when I talk in a meeting and I say, oh my God, the worst has happened, I'm going through this death, or I'm going through, you know, somebody important to me, you know, and somebody will say, let's talk after mm-hmm. the meeting. Mm-hmm. Now, I may not even know you before that encounter, but you've had something happen so similar to mine that we can bond. Suddenly, you're in that second circle helping me. You're part of my higher power helping me. That's that center circle, recognizing we will be taken care of no matter what.
And yeah, yes. And what we kind of found was, even this, the part of our story is, we are not, Rob and I, actually, we met in recovery meetings. We were not immediately involved with each other. But this was maybe represent some of the changes that had happened in each of us individually. But one of the things I did know in with some of the people I was dating, I was developing an ability to state needs, an ability to negotiate without fear, and frankly, not be as frightened if it wasn't right. I kind of get, well, it's not meant to be. And so our bottom note on this slide is that ACA teaches us to create secure relationships at our emotional center. I'd say particularly one that protects our inner child. Once my inner child can trust, all of me can trust. And then the other thing is, I think we both felt like we started making better relationship mm-hmm. choices. I actually got to a point where I realized I might be in solitude as far as a romantic relationship goes. I stopped feeling desperate about it. And so now it was like, I was only more interested if you came into life and supported values I was doing otherwise. We were playing around with what this was. And
can I talk about the I'm worthy of love?
Please, okay. Yes.
So early, there were a lot of things early in the relationship that, because we had been friends for a while, and then that shifts. And we all know, boy, that gets tough once it shifts into a romantic relationship. And I don't know what was going on. And I told you about my history where I actually was not putting myself out that much. And at one point to Charlie, I said, I deserve to be loved all out. And if you're not that guy, just move on. And he kind of paused and he said, well, I might be that guy. But I realized even if I said that, I cannot ask that of somebody else unless I'm willing to do it too. And I had to check in myself. Am I finally, after all these years of recovery and working, I might be hurt, but I've got myself and higher power and all of you in some way in that center circle. Can I really risk loving all out in what now my new definition of love was, which is to value somebody's growth and recovery mm-hmm. and to my personal mm-hmm. honesty and give that in trust. That was very big for me. And yeah. You seem to be that guy.
So far, so good. And so... And so, but basically the funny thing is because we're going to get into our first year, it was not as amicable as where we are right now. You know, but basically all of this was different things. For me, anybody who came into my life was going to have to treat my inner child well. Mm-hmm. And I was going to have to acknowledge to them I had an inner child. They were going to have to support my recovery. My first wife really hated everything about ACA. And so I, again, this new world I created became more important to me than another person. And so I was joking around with a way to express this. And my shorthand was, my inner child is precious. You are an experiment. And that was a very different way of looking at somebody coming into my life than my...
Instead of center of the universe,
yes,
right?
Exactly. I'll do anything. Please change my world. And so... So we'll go into this more later. That a big part of what kind of made Robin's and my relationship work differently, we really felt like we needed to create a blended family where our inner kids can come out and about. And it's not like Robin is my mom or I am Robin's dad, but it's like we both share the parenting, be the loving parent role for all of the kids in our family. And I will say an added bonus to that is when we share the loving parent role this way, we stop wanting to turn our partners into mom or dad or the rescue.
It's just we're looking for the win-win whenever we can. And we talk about it. We're honest enough to say, wait a minute, that's not a win-win, that's a win-lose. So what do we need to do?
So we're going to do one more minute of homework. because a lot of this obviously has to do with what's the place of an inner child in your relationship choices. Again, now we're getting closer to coupleship, but this is really everything. Somebody you meet in ACA, you think you might want to ask them to sponsor you. You don't know. You might want to take them, you know, talk to them more. It could be a workmate who you just have a connection with, or it could be somebody you're interested in dating or going more serious with. Do you have a sense of how your inner child responds to these relationship choices you make? And how can you help that child? So if you could take a minute to just reflect and jot down a few notes. We'll come back. Okay, about 10 more seconds. Okay. Going to move on to kind of our last main segment about coupleship and recovery, which is, as you might imagine, its own set of challenges. We talked earlier about these 12 deficits, typical deficits, a lot of which tracks in trauma literature as well as ACA literature of children who are emotionally traumatized early. And we wanted to talk a little bit about how some of these things had begun to change in the years in ACA before Robin and I connected and therefore had to lay a different foundation. Okay. And I'm maybe not going to go through all of them, but attachment disorder, that race in, run away, kind of hugely ashamed. My whole teenage dating world was built around that. As I began to realize I didn't need other people quite that way, I was all right on my own, I stopped feeling that urgency and therefore that panic. I also, because reparenting had worked, I was no longer as afraid for the well-being of my inner child, which I think would also cover two other things. Emotional flashbacks. I think we all have experiences where we're in an adult situation and suddenly we feel like our terrified three-year-old is there. I actually associate the kind of panic that was mentioned earlier with a scared inner child who's in over his head, doesn't know what to do, and is afraid he's going to get bopped. Six, that sense of triggerable fear. I say the wrong thing, I'll be abandoned. All of these things really started to moderate for me in ACA. Certainly when I became my own loving parent and was around other people who were their loving parents, that really helped modify my desire for somebody to step in and become the mother I never had. Go ahead, Robin.
Yeah, so for me, as I said earlier, codependence and loss of identity was huge because I made everybody my higher power except for me or a real higher power. And I was really, like I said, emotionally shut down and compartmentalized. And this is, as I mentioned, one of the saving graces. When I compartmentalized, a lot of it went into music and art. And when I started writing, when I started listening to the music, I actually would do like a relationship playlist to process feelings, get down to my emotional self. This also was what the inner child could give me. How does it feel? How do you feel? And it's kind of interesting. I mean, you go back to some of those old 50s and 60s songs, like Rescue Me, right? You know, I mean, you could do a playlist that does the whole gamut, and it got me in touch with my feelings and what I wanted to do. And I was moving out of that. Now I was getting in touch. Now I understood. So I was, and I thought, you know, Thelma and Louise, as far as this feeling unworthy and unlovable, there's this line, you get what you settle for. And by the time I've been in ACA a while, and actually I now knew I was moving out of my relationship with my first husband, I really wasn't interested necessarily in another relationship, but I kind of knew, you know, I just like I needed to be loved full out, that I was not going to settle. You know, you get what you settle for. That's not about, like, I don't know, things that maybe when I was younger I thought about, but in terms of treatment of one another, I wanted a partnership. I wanted an equal partnership. And I had stayed in relationships, loyalty, just way beyond the pale. I mean, any therapist would say, what are you doing? But it was like, well, my God, we took those vows or we made those promises. That it's not like I don't feel loyalty, but I also recognize just when something's not working and that we need to talk about it. We need to negotiate. But and also that fear of change, right? Oh my God, this relationship is terrible, but what's on the other side? The fear of the unknown used to be crippling. Now I've learned to change and grow, and again, I have that higher power. Mm-hmm. I can talk to my inner kid and she's less afraid. And we have people we can talk about. We can talk about being afraid even.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to just say on one of these, the thing about feeling unworthy and unlovable, I was consumed with a sense of not being worthy and not being lovable. And that's obviously a huge detriment in forming any close relationship. One gift of all recovery, and this is, includes other 12-step programs, to be in an environment where people extend love with no strings attached. I just am pulling for you to get better. Mm-hmm. It helped me begin to receive love in a way I never had. And I became gradually, in ACA especially, I felt lovable. I'm going to say let's pass over this slide because we are now officially running late despite our best effort.
Unless there's a couple of real quick. Okay. All right. As we said, we had this friendship for like a year and a half. Why this person? Charlie kept surprising me. I come up with these wackadoodle things like, you know, I need to be loved all. But I had learned in friendship who he was. And I had a therapist when I was probably complaining about something. And she said, well, maybe he's not a prince, but he's not an entire toad. Can you handle a man with some warts? I thought, well, yeah, I have plenty of warts too. So you take a couple. This is good, actually.
Yeah, actually, I've got to say that. couple of things. I was still scared to get involved when Rob and I got together. Very scared. One day at a time really kept me in the saddle. Times when I might have run. I actually one day I remember was just consumed with fear. And I actually, some voice in my head said, well, are you okay right now? Are you okay today? And I realized, yeah, I'm actually okay right now. I'm enjoying Rob and I'm having a good time. But I was all in this like fear of where is this all leading? And so I had to get used to it. I just needed to not really be ready for prime time, but ready enough to try.
And we knew that. And one other weird thing I asked of him was, because both of us had done therapy, Charlie wasn't afraid of it. I said, you know, if one of us is about to hit that eject button, which either one of us could, you've heard our stories, could we go to a therapist, mm-hmm. not to keep us together, but to find out what we're so afraid of? Mm-hmm. And although we've individually gone into therapy in all these years, this process has worked for us. We have never together been to a therapist, to marriage couples, mm-hmm. because we do this, we mm-hmm. talk, and it's quite amazing.
And the other one, which I say, I never would have dreamed of this, because I always used to think that right woman was going to be the solution to every problem in my life. We really both have an ethic now of win or lose, our recovery stays in the center, mm-hmm. not another person. And so, so as a result, I don't know, just it keeps things in balance. Mm-hmm. I just don't have that crazy, wild ups and downs, you know, in our relationship.
We both value that in each other's sobriety in all things and honesty and the program. And no, we don't get between, they always say, if you put anything before your program, you lose it. And we really keep the recovery mm-hmm. in the mm-hmm. center of it.
It's worked very well. And again, not something I would have imagined before. And it's just the way things evolve for us. And then lastly, we have this line here, if you react in your past, take a pause. We both are adult children with childhood trauma. We still experience emotional flashbacks. I would say I'm probably more prone to it even than Robin is. We cut ourselves slack when that happens. Again, ACA has sort of given us a language to understand what's going on here. It's, and it gives us a chance to go through it. So we did want to touch on just a few questions because these are things that I think sort of talk about. How does this go in real life?
I want to talk about that argue thing because it's such a, okay.
Sounds good.
We do fight, okay. But early on when we would just think, oh my God, we're just as terrible and oh, we're being triggered all over the place and things. Somehow we examined each other's worst fears. And Charlie had a mom who would just be after him. And so he would just want to run out of the house. Well, you heard about my trauma. I was afraid if he ran out of the house and we were angry at each other and he'd get hit by a car or he'd be driving a car. So we made a deal. It's like, all right, if we start to argue and it starts to escalate, either one of us could call a timeout. And that was 10 minutes away from each other. And we could get as far away from each other as we could in the house, but Charlie agreed he wouldn't leave the house. He might end up in the attic because he wants to get away from me so much, or the basement. And I wouldn't try to chase after, wait, just one more thing, or let's make up. And somehow we could do that. Then there's something about, we now know more about the brain. So we wouldn't even stay in this mm-hmm. really highly agitated emotional mm-hmm. survival state. We'd start going, wait a minute, I know this person. We can start mm-hmm. to talk about things. Mm-hmm. Hugely important. Therapists have helped us with that type of thing, to understand even how trauma works and how our brain works. Right.
I want to say in 25 years, I have decisively won 3 arguments. I cherish those moments. Unfortunately, Robin has a disturbing tendency as this cooling down period is happening to start making more sense to me. My previously brilliant position seems a little more shaky. And anyway, I'm still waiting for argument number 4, victory number 4 that I can also savor. But basically the thing is, again, we come out of that past. We come out of that flashback mentality. And once we realize we're on the same page again, the argument becomes a discussion. But we have with these timeouts that Robin's talking about, I remember once we were trapped in a car driving 150 miles. And I think we did 3 10-minute timeouts sitting next to each other in a car. And by the third time, we were actually laughing about it. And so it helps sort of dissolve the ice. But really and truly giving ourselves space to turn screaming into processing really is a consistent way that we move out of the past into the present. Yeah, I want to talk about where do our inner children fit in? Because again, if we couldn't make that safe, if we couldn't make that safe to, allow the inner children here, I don't think we'd have a foundation to operate on. Now, this is Barclay. The reason Barclay is in our household today is even like when Rob and our first year together, we happened to go into the stuffed animal store of all stuffed animal stores. It was like a palace. And Robin grabbed this grizzly bear. And because this thing was so huge, it actually made her look a little bit like a 6-year-old.
I felt like a little kid. It was great.
And she was just laughing. And I just thought, that bear has to come into our house. When I bought it, it took like 3 rolls of wrapping paper to cover it. She had no idea. And yet we've had these moments over the years where, again, we don't ask the other person to parent us, but we treat each other with love. I want to say something very special for me. One time, I was very much in a child place, and my child always feared rejecting. And I looked up, and there was just a look of smile in Robin's face and in her eyes. And I felt loved. And it really healed my inner kid a lot.
I love his inner kid. This is little Charlie at a Celtics game. And this is a version 2. I was at a writer's conference and, you know, there was a meet and greet and things like that. And the Celtics is his favorite team from childhood. And I'm like, no, you do not need to go to a writer's meet and greet. We'll figure out a way for you to get on the train and get to that basketball game. And he had the best time. This is a selfie. I wasn't there. I was at the boring meet and greet, but.
It actually felt like it was an inner child selfie. So the other thing I want to talk about briefly, because it should never be lost, is how do the steps guide our marriage? Robin, how would you?
All the way through, because we have to, so many times we've had to admit we were powerless over our past, over the triggering moments, and that sort of thing. So many times we had to turn to higher power and ask for help, and our community to ask for help. It takes more than a village to really help us with these relationships. So really, any way the steps have helped us individually, they've also helped our marriage. And, you know, he can be really, really good sometimes at mirroring back. We do meetings. We do individual meetings if we're traveling. I've been away for a while, and every night that we would talk, we do our own mini meeting. I mean, this is the recovery is a big part of it. That's one of the ways we share, because you can share something neutral. You pick up a recovery book and say, let's share about this.
Yeah, it's actually pretty amazing. Again, something I would not have guessed when I first got into ACA, how transforming the 12 steps are and how much they really fit in any situation. I think the first step, the fact that we both knew we were powerless over this condition we were born into, again, it helps us put it into perspective when either one of us goes into some sudden regression, and then the second and third steps, and I know there's a whole range of feelings about God, but I just think simply having faith that there's something out there bigger than this family of origin experience I grew up with. The common thing you hear people say is, oh, nobody modeled good parenting for me, good marriage relationships. All true. But in ACA, we met the guides we needed to meet. We kind of found our own way forward. And having that faith that if we just kept coming back, working the program, allowed a spiritual power into our lives, that would move us forward. And then lastly, the biggest gift for me is the 10th step, gift of apology and commitment to a change. You know, I am embarrassed to admit this, particularly for my fellow men in the room, but I once realized that when I apologized to Robin, it was music to her ears. So I actually will sing a song that sort of is roughly like, you were right, and
we both do it now.
We both do it now. And it really absolutely, again, instead of being in shame, instead of being locked in anger, I'm going to just, no, I think we need to do this. Right. Sure. So basically every day, every way, we also do nightly, not every night, but several nights a week, sort of look back on our day, kinds of meetings. It keeps us current.
And we keep sharing. And also if we know we can tell something and somebody's like, well, it's not a good time to talk. Well, we'll make an appointment for a better time to talk. Yeah. Like when Charlie used to come home from the office, I might've had something that happened. I would say, I need to talk about something, but I can tell now's not really a good time. When's a good time? When can we have the space to talk and stuff? And we would find a space when everybody was, you know, a little bit more relaxed. And even if it was a tough issue, we'd find a place to do that.
And so again, we're going to move into opening up for questions, but I think we feel like this healthy relationship description from the Big Red Book is a pretty good description. Plus, we also have the promises, which we'll come back to in closing, where we do have a chance to play and have fun in our lives. That kind of thing is not all 24/7 processing, you know, but basically the relationship has worked because our programs worked. Mm-hmm. It changed us inside and eventually changed our values and our skills, you know, and it all really, I keep saying, it began in ACA meetings. That's where our ability to do all the range of relationships we do it took root.
And when we learn how to be honest with ourselves and authentic with ourselves, then we put that out in the world and chances are way more likely we're going to attract somebody cares, I see who you are and I like what I see. Mm-hmm. I told Charlie stuff in our friendship I had never told anybody, really, not anybody, but he was like, well, that's interesting. That's kind of cool. You know, I showed him old artwork from my days as a child. And he was like, wow, that's amazing. And so when you put out who you are and you take that risk, and sometimes you get hurt, and then that's when you go back to your inner circle and your inner people, but you take the risk and sometimes HP is right there and helping you find the right person because you're ready to accept yourself. You're going to find the person that wants to accept and love you too, mm-hmm. but you got to show who you are.
Yeah. And for that, when we are real selves, we find a person that's there. That elusive thing I was talking earlier about trust mm-hmm. between adult children, that's been one of the most powerful things between me and Robin, to mm-hmm. be with somebody who I just completely trust. I believe she wants my well-being. Even when we are struggling, mm-hmm. I always believe mm-hmm. that. Could never have gotten there without the ACA healing. So we're going to actually turn this back over again. I'm going to stop the sharing we still actually have a fair amount of time. And so if you would like to be recognized to comment or ask questions.
Charlie, this is Julianne. The number one question in the chat area is, will the slides from your presentation be available for download?
If people, yes, there's an AWC schedule screen. I'm also recovering behind schedule students, so we really only finished this PowerPoint late in the game.
Down to the minute.
so that one I'm still working on. So sometime this afternoon, we'll do a few sort of like copyrighty type stuff, things on it. And I'll give it to Brad to post in place where it now says no download available. This you'll actually be able to link to this a modified version of this PowerPoint. I'm flattered people are interested. So yes, that's the answer to that question. So if anybody would like to be recognized, I see 12 hands are up. Let me 13. We'll try to keep your questions to maybe a minute and we'll just go as far as we can. We had originally thought about doing breakout rooms. I'm thinking that's probably
too hard.
Too many. So we're just going to stay here together as a group. So Catherine L, you are the first person. And if somebody can assist you in speaking, that would be great.
I apologize. I was distracted. Who?
Yeah. Catherine L.
There we go.
Hi. Thank you so much. This is, I think, the second time I've heard the two of you speak, and it has such a profound effect on me. I really love the circles as a model, a visual model of what we're used to, and then what the alternative is. And I can really see how those patterns have played out in my life. And that really links with what I wanted to say, which is, as I go through this process, I've been divorced twice, and I keep seeing that my critical parent is angry at my inner child for marrying the wrong people, settling, and then also for leaving them. Mm-hmm. And I can see those same voices coming from my actual parents and also my brother and sister-in-law who I also turned into my other critical parents. It's a double bind that I keep myself in. The more I go through this process and try to be in relationships, the more I see that power struggle continue inside myself. And certainly the loving parent work seems like a way out of that. Mm-hmm. The circles that you guys presented also is just, sounds to me like it could be a really validating exercise for me to kind of write in.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's what we've done. Yeah.
Circles before. Yeah. And how has that now changed? And then I guess to continue that on. I started a relationship. I moved.
Catherine.
Here. Yeah.
Can I ask you to sort of wrap up in about 15
seconds? That's it. That was the last thing I was going to say is that I moved in with someone last year as COVID started, and we moved out at the beginning of September, mm-hmm. having gone through this exact process. Right. And I'm now kind of restarting, figuring out now what. Again.
Yeah, I want to say two things. But first off, the pandemic, if you're with a partner, boy, was that a, wow, that was a lot for people to have to go through and a re-traumatizing period for many of us. The other thing, there was something that flashed up on about the screen about sexual abuse. Yes. And I want to address that one for two reasons. First, obviously, particularly if it's early sexual abuse, you will probably need professional help, mm-hmm. because it's, if you really want to be able to have the very, very full type relationship, there's a lot of healing that needs to do. But I'm going to tell something very, very personal that I don't often share, but except to very, very close friends. But I went through two rapes, and with one, I thought I was going to be killed. It was a stranger, and what happened was he was strangling me, and I got through it. And I won't go into all the details. I got through it. I survived. Now, that was in my history. Now, this is the interesting part about becoming friends and friends who share things with each other. Charlie, after even our friendship, knew my history, knew I had this in my history. And when we had shifted over to being couples, at one point we were together in a couple type of way, and we had started some sort of argument when we were in a fairly vulnerable place, and I don't think he even meant to, but he just happened to put his hand, maybe just to push me away a little bit, but right in that throat area. I went into, anybody who's had a full-on flashback, a complete, I was there, I was back, and he saw it instantly. And because he knew my history, and this was early on, he just stopped, all anger was gone. And he was like, are you okay? Robin, come back. Are you okay? Because we had gotten to know each other, because we knew our history, he actually helped me through it. And I was then able to talk to therapists and stuff about things like that. So even the one of the toughest things, if you get help in the community professionally, and you have somebody that you start to learn to share those things, there's amazing healing that can happen. I thought that was important to address for everybody, because a lot of us went through stuff like that. Yeah.
I will say, for me, this is an elusive thing. I believe I was abused in my first 1 to 2 years, mm-hmm. obviously pre-consciousness. It has a deep effect. People I know who have been aware, we all know that's one of the worst things that happens in a alcoholic or dysfunctional family. Of course it has an impact. It just seems so down to the cell. But I think again, this is not just a talk on coupleship. It's a talk about learning how to build any foundation of trust with other people. I think it's the hardest challenge for adult children. Our trust, children are so naturally trusting. Mm-hmm. 1-2 years old, I'm open to the whole world. Mm-hmm. And when that gets violated, literally in some cases, we lose the ability to trust before we've even spoken our first word. Right. And so for all of us, it's a challenge. But I would say anybody who has an actual sexual abuse history, I think professional help has to be a huge part of the journey forward. So thank you, Catherine, for getting that. And for the woman who asked the second question, Robin responded to. Amelia S. is the person on the top of my list of hands. We're just going to keep going until we get evicted, which I think will be about 10 minutes from now.
Okay, I'm off mute. Is that work?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you for that. I've never heard anyone address that. And I think I was molested as an infant, and I only have a visual of like a nightmare. Mm-hmm. And I have no proof of what happened or what didn't happen. And it keeps coming up in my life, and I need to do something about it, just to get it off my heart, because it's there. And I think it affects my life. When I have relationships with someone, a short while after, I push them away. Mm-hmm. And I've not been able to have a real close knit connection with anyone. And years ago, my mother made me a suit, and I had lost weight, and I looked so good, and I wore stockings and heels. And I walked down to the little place, and I was terrified to walk back because I felt so exposed.
Right, right.
And fortunately, one of my neighbors walked by, and I said, please, can I walk with you?
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just influences. And I realized that it runs through my life, and I've never really talked about it or addressed it. And I'm so grateful that you two have the courage to come on and share who you are with us. Oh God, that a good relationship is possible. And I've not found that person. I haven't found me to be in that relationship. So that's, I think, where I need to start. And thank you for calling on me. I'm grateful.
Thank you, Amelia. Next person up is Eileen B.
I had my hand raised. Sorry.
I caught you by surprise.
I had it raised from last night. But that's good.
You can pass if you want.
No, that's good, because everything you're talking about is I had all kinds of abuse and sexual as a child. Both my husband and I are both in ACA. I'm sorry, I'm emotional. This is, I do need professional help. I know that. I've been trying to do it myself with different people, sexual assault center, and I was in AA. I have been in AA for 41 years, and it just didn't get to the root. Mm-hmm. I've needed, I need more help than what I'm getting. So thank you for your sharing. Thank you very much.
Thank you for sharing. Yeah. One of the things I want to say that now in therapy, one of the things they're looking at, particularly for childhood abuse, we may never know explicitly what happened. I was older when I went through the rapes, so I do know explicitly. But sometimes in childhood, we don't even know. They now are understanding that we might just have that implicit emotional flashback. Mm-hmm. We get the feeling, we get the mm-hmm. fear. Mm-hmm. And so a new process now, so that we're not just in that survivor emotional fear place, is to learn to do mindfulness. A lot of people do meditation things. Get into that calming place, because then we can just reassure our inner kid, okay, you're safe now. You're okay now. And then other parts of the brain start to kick in, and it'll give you that chance to process through the feeling, get past that fear. I mean, and I know every woman, I do not know, there's not one woman, probably some men, who haven't gone through that. They're in a parking garage. They hear the steps behind them. We've got those keys ready because something has happened to us. And maybe sometimes it's even, we were so young, we don't even know what it was, but we need to take care of ourselves. Yes. But then also understand that there is healing to find out I am safe now. Now I need to walk through this feeling with somebody who can help me. I don't know if that helps a little.
I'd like to pause for a moment. Mm-hmm. Would you be, a lot of people want it? Sort of maintain contact. Would you be averse to us sharing our email addresses?
No.
One of the things we'll do on the chat in a second, there's many more hands we'll be able to recognize today, and also a lot of questions for people who might want some follow-up. On the chat, Robin and I will post our email addresses. Probably women would be better advised to start with Robin, and men with me. But it won't be immediate, but certainly if you can wait a few weeks, we will.
Yeah, if over time, you know, just trying to take a few, you know, just because sometimes it just helps to know we're not alone, you know, but this is a process. This is definitely a process.
Okay. Now, all panels and attendees, so hopefully I won't do any typos in the minute, but if we could call on Zalia.
W.
Can I be heard?
Yes, you can.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for your presentation and your shares. It has truly, truly touched me. There's so much to be said about the relationships, but it basically gets down to me for trust. My trust was violated very early on in my childhood by my siblings. I'm an incest survivor, as well as my parents as well. And so I found, and I'm now starting to really understand how that is affecting my adult relationships, all the things that I experienced in my childhood, what I take with me. And one of the biggest things that I do is I run very hot and cold. You know, I'm very hot to start a relationship, but once I'm in it, I'm just like, I got to get out. I got to eject. I got to get away. And I never understood why that was. And I'm so thankful for this fellowship for helping me understand parts of myself that I just didn't have that insight into. I just didn't know. And so your relationship talk like really gives me hope. Right now, I'm still very much an isolator in terms of relationships. I still get kind of freaked out by, you know, wanting to connect with even fellow travelers. But, you know, with time, I'm actually starting to make steps. Like I went to a meeting this morning and I asked for somebody's phone number for the first time. Mm-hmm. I usually wait for someone else to ask for my phone number. So I'm putting myself out there and being vulnerable, and I'm starting to see the result. So thank you so much for your shares, because it's given me hope. Thank you.
Maybe time for one or two more to call on. John C.
Hi, I'm John. It's really good to hear you. I guess I'm so sorry to hear about the awful things that people have been through, really. It's thrown me a bit, actually. But I guess, I mean, I was emotionally incested by a raging / loving mother. So I had a compulsive gambling father. But oddly, my mum's brothers and sisters all had really wonderful love relationships. And I guess for me, in this sort of minute I have, it's just the first thing to get through was sort of this crazy love addictions from about 4 to 40. And then 40 to now, I'm 49, just feel like I've fallen apart, really, because you know, not having that in my life, thinking that one person will fix me. I've been in ACA for a year. Often I have heart attack feelings. I have to push my chest against the bed for like a half a day, whatever. But my doctor says there's nothing wrong. So, you know, I make the gay man as well. So, you know, so I guess, how does one look after oneself in that? You know, will you be writing a book about couple stuff? Will there be, you know, and how do single people meet their needs almost sexually? You know, it's the question I've been thinking in early sort of recovery, you know, because there's still a need there, but I'm just so scared at the same time. So yeah, those are my thoughts.
Oh, let me start, John. One thing, because I also had a history of sexual addiction. It's almost, I think, and I think women oftentimes love addiction. I think it's almost a natural outcome of this kind of, I'm isolated, I'm lonely, I'm desperately hungry. And then it's too much and I run away and the cycle resumes. I think the core thing a lot of us have been talking about is, the core of this is, I believe, finding safety at the center. And the truth is, not only do we not need another person to do that initially, it actually may complicate trying to bring somebody into that process. If I can begin to form not just a loving relationship of my child, but a relationship where my inner child feels truly protected and mm-hmm. safe, and he can count on me. That took a while.
Well, like the Loving Parent Guidebook.
Yeah, the Loving Parent Guidebook has come out. I think that's really a first stop in terms of how to create a world of safety, because ultimately, as children, we weren't well protected.
And think of how we feel about protecting our biological children, right? That's when we turn to a mama tiger, you know? And if we start protecting ourselves that same way about like, and just kind of say, and we don't always have to be that tough about it, but just no, we need to agree to disagree. I need to walk away. We need to dial this back. I'll talk to you later. Finding ways to protect our inner self. So it's a combination of love and protection. The way we would have wanted to be parented, mm-hmm. we can now parent ourselves mm-hmm. the way we would have wanted to be parented. And it makes a big difference.
In my experience, is that kind of healing went a long way, again, with therapy, mm-hmm. to quieting addiction is kind of a kidnaps a natural way of connecting,
right?
Addicts tend to be very lonely people who don't connect with others. So learning to have a true emotional love connection in our own center opens the door to whole different ways of going. I will actually tell people when I work with a lot of people who need that recovery, I say it was the most liberating thing in my life when I moved from an addictive way of trying to gain connection to really a heart-based way of gaining connection.
Mm-hmm. Last thing, anything else? Yeah, well, I was just going to say, you know, I don't know how many people saw Groundhog Day. I think it's a great recovery movie, because one of the things that you see is Bill Murray, as he goes through day after day after a day, as he's trying to get this woman to love him. And he's going through all of this play acting and things like that, all this manipulation. And as he moves through the same day over and over again, it shifts because he shifts. And the actual possibility, instead of an addictive, compulsive, gotta have her, it turns into something different about a whole person wanting to wholly connect with higher power, with other people, and a significant other eventually.
Mm-hmm. You know,
Charlie, Adelina's here, and it's around 11:40. So just
one. I know. So thank you for even giving us a few extra minutes, Brad.
Okay.
So we are, as promised.
He said until booted out. Here okay. we go.
we have arrived at that point where it's time to say goodbye for today. I will say, please take a minute or two if you'd like further contact. We're going to also look at the chat, but that's a little complicated because of the way it's been set up. If you want a response, do send either one of us an email, and it'll take us a while, but we'll get back. We'll continue this conversation. I regret we can't be on the call longer. I just want to thank everybody. Mm-hmm. It's clearly a big, big topic for all of us, and I'm sure we'll find ways to continue the conversation. So again, thank you all. And I see Liz on the screen. Could you lead us out in a closing serenity prayer, Liz?
Thank you. I'd be happy to. After a deep breath, we can all say the Serenity Prayer in whatever language and form you like. Higher power, grant me the serenity to accept the people I cannot change, the courage to change the one I can, and the wisdom to know that one is me.
And then lastly, in 17 minutes, the closing ceremony will begin. I really invite and urge everybody to be there if you can be. It was really amazing last year. So thank you all.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for all the tech support and everything. Yes. Thanks, everybody in the community.
Okay. Bye-bye.